Welcome to the Hockey Show on ESPN Chicago. The very latest news and analysis from the NHL and Chicagoland hockey. Brought to you by Chevy Drive Chicago. Now here are your hosts, Barstool Chief and Pat Boyle.
No PB tonight. I'm Jeff Meller hanging out with you, but don't worry, we've got the expertise of Barstool Chief to keep me in line as we talk all things Hawks and hockey with you. We're on the Olympic break, so you know we're going to talk a lot of Olympic hockey. But before we do that, Chief, first and foremost, I have to ask you, because I believe since the last time you were on these airwaves, it is official, we believe now, that the Blackhawks have one less chance of picking in the top 10 than we originally believed prior to you being on the airwaves tonight, as it was revealed within the last 5 or 6 days that the first-round pick that the Hawks acquired from the Florida Panthers in the Seth Jones-Spencer Knight deal is actually, it's conditional. Mm-hmm. And apparently, if the Florida Panthers finish in the top 10 of the NFL draft lottery, they will not be sending the Hawks their first-round pick this season. And that was not what we were originally led to believe.
Correct. It was one of those things where I feel like it was the Panthers, so nobody bothered to look or ask, because the idea of the two-time defending Stanley Cup champion, three-time Eastern Conference champion, picking in the top 10 was just like, well, that's never going to happen. So no one even looked. And now, as things stand right now, that pick without the lottery would be the 10th pick in the draft. So I think it was Frank Saravalli or someone was digging around and was like, actually, there is a top 10 protected on there. So, yes, there is a chance that that first-round pick could be bumped to, I believe, next year. Having said that, right now, as it stands, the Florida Panthers are sitting on 61 points, and they are 8 points out of a playoff spot. Philadelphia is also on 61. Toronto's on 63. Ottawa's on 63. Washington's on 65. Columbus is on 65. I have a hard time believing that there won't be some sort of post-Olympics playoff push by the Florida Panthers to get themselves in the mix. So 8 points and jumping, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams is going to be a tall task. But they just, you get the Tkachuk, you know, Matthew Tkachuk's healthy now. As they, I think Barkov might be coming back at some point. As they get their best players back and rolling, and they are the Florida Panthers. So I just don't think that this will end up being a talking point. That pick will be probably somewhere between 14 and 20, if I had to guess. Mm-hmm. So I think the Hawks will have 2 first-round picks this year. But it was like an injury, like, hey, wait a second.
Yes.
I thought we might have 2 shots at winning the lottery.
Well, and truth be told, you know, anybody who, I think, if you're a Hawks fan, you probably, over the last few years, have become somewhat familiar with Tankathon.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Because
I've got it up right now, Jeff.
It's exactly what I'm staring at. And the difference is, you know, and they were clued in at the same time as many of us, because for the longest time, they did have the Hawks in possession of the Florida Panthers' first-round pick, if you know, without the condition of that top 10. So, and I think your point is absolutely the salient one here. Nobody really envisioned the Panthers, you know, the back-to-back Cup winners as a team you would even think about missing the playoffs. Yeah. But of course, all the injuries did pile up. But now that Matthew Tkachuk is back, we do have an Olympic break, so he has to get through healthy. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that was where he sustained his initial injury, I believe, in the Four Nations.
Correct.
Originally. Yeah. So, nevertheless, though, he's back, he's healthy, and he's going to be playing for Team USA. So, that is good news from our rooting standpoint. But, nevertheless, I think you're absolutely right. It's hard to envision the Panthers not finishing above 10th in the final standings. Maybe the lottery could roll their way, and that actually would work against the Hawks. But nevertheless, the biggest takeaway here is, hey, I think it's still a great trade.
Absolutely.
Spencer Knight.
I thought it was a great trade even without that first-round pick. So just getting Seth Jones off your books, which, you know, Seth Jones was always a good player. He got way too much hate here, kind of even before he played a game.
Yeah. That, I mean, we can blame Stan Bowman for that.
But it was like
the way it was presented.
And then there was like analytics from when he was in Columbus at the end, and like they were a bad team, and you know he was kind of struggling per the data. But as soon as you put him on the Florida Panthers, like they don't win the Stanley Cup without him. He was fantastic in that playoff run. He's a very good player. So, but getting your number one goalie of the future, if that was a deal straight up, that's a win. And Spencer Knight, that he's been a home run for the Blackhawks, even with a young defense and a struggling team. He's still been fairly consistent. He was shot out of a cannon to start the year. I thought he had an outside shot of making Team USA. He was so good the first 2-3 months of the year. And then as the team slid back, he did a little bit too. But he's definitely a top 10 goalie in the league for my money. And now the Hawks have a big question mark erased because they were able to – and they moved Seth Jones off. So the trade was a win. The pick is a bonus. And if they get it this year, great. If not, you can take it next year. Maybe you package it as some, you know, for some kind of trade next summer.
Yeah. So that's like you said, it's a win. You feel like the Hawks are still in a good spot with the deal that they make. And you know what? Maybe since we're here, it's worth asking. You know, of course, right now the Hawks, where they currently sit, they have the sixth worst record in the NHL. So you know, the lottery again is going to be a talking point in all likelihood when we get to the end of the season. And Gavin McKenna.
Yeah.
That's a story that I think most people are very familiar with. For the longest time, at least at the beginning of the season, he was initially believed to be the likely top overall pick. Now, things have changed slightly as Stenberg, with Frundell, at times has certainly looked like a top pick in this upcoming draft. But nevertheless, Gavin McKenna.
Mm-hmm.
He had some interesting charges that were initially put on him over the weekend. And
broke a guy's jaw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, fill us in. Gavin McKenna, I think right now he's probably thought to be the second pick, the most likely to be second pick in this draft.
Yeah.
But obviously things can change still. Nevertheless, he's probably going to be at the very least a top three pick in this draft.
Yeah, I think he's top four for sure.
Okay,
people love that Tynan Lawrence, too, who's more of like a natural center. So he's a kid playing for BU. So who knows? But the McKenna story, as I understand it, the charges have been dropped.
Yes.
Supposedly it was after the outdoor game where they played Michigan State. And somebody was like chirping him and his mom
after a party with the team.
At a bar.
Yep.
And it sounds like McKenna had enough, and things escalated, and he broke the guy's jaw in two places. And I saw some discussions about how that would take him off of the Blackhawks big board. Stock up, as far as I'm concerned. If that's the story where he's defending his mother, and somebody he had to give somebody the what for, you know, I don't mind that at all. So, and there was some, you know, he's a skinny kid.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, oh, is he going to be able to, you know, like, hang it in the NHL? And I think that it's probably part of his struggles. He's had some struggles that he's been better as of late. But part of his struggles at college hockey.
Sure.
Freshmen in college hockey are 20, 21 years old. So he is effectively playing against men. The seniors are usually 24. So it's a much different game than when he's playing against 16-year-olds out in the Western League in Canada. So there's been an adjustment. He's still putting up points.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he has some bite that nobody really really thought. And then the other interesting nugget that came out of that, because it was widely reported that he and Connor Bedard are cousins. And when I had heard that, I didn't know what was going on. I thought there was like they were first cousins or doing Christmas morning and holidays together. I guess it's like through marriage, eighth cousin, once removed. Like they didn't like grow up together. Like they talk now because they've made the connection, but it's not like they were like super close or anything.
Sure.
Or their families were close.
So yeah, and not blood.
No.
Yeah,
well, I don't know, but it's not like it's not like it's his mom's sister, like kind of thing. So,
and to your point, he's 18 years old, you know, playing against men.
Right.
He's listed at 170 pounds. Truth be told, 18-year-olds for the most part haven't reached anywhere near their physical peak. For men, mostly, they usually fill out when you get into your 20s.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's not really a surprise that he has found it a little bit more difficult going up against bigger bodied players in the NCAA, but still producing. He's got 32 points in 24 games, including 11 goals.
Which is insane. And it's like he was kind of projected as the next one. Mm-hmm. Right? We had Bedard, then you had Celebrini, and then, you know, last year, not like that home run type of guy.
Yep.
We
didn't know Schaefer was going to be.
We didn't know Schaefer was out the whole year. Schaefer is definitely in that category too, but like that was, it's a different thing when it's forwards versus defensemen.
Yes,
and McKenna was supposed to be like that next. Not everybody's Macklin Celebrini. We go in and get 2 points a game in college. It's just not going to happen. So it doesn't mean he can't be a top NHL player someday. It just he might not be the best player in the world like Celebrini is tracking towards being.
So, yeah, that's kind of the latest regarding what has gone on since the last time that Chief was here on ESPN 1000 hosting the hockey show. Again, PB is off this week, taking a little R&R as the Hawks are on break. So PB's taking a little time off. Yes, absolutely well-earned. But that is the latest with the Hawks. Again, the biggest news that the Panthers pick does have that condition on it. And again, it's nothing that changed. It always existed.
Yeah.
We just got clued in here. But, you know, ultimately, don't be too upset.
Yeah.
The Hawks still really pulled off, I think, a coup of a trade in landing Spencer. And I'm completely with you. I've been smitten and enamored with, you know, since his debut.
He's got all the right stuff.
Yeah.
He's a good size, really good athlete, technically sound. As the team gets better around him, he's only going to look better. He's still like, this is kind of say this is his first year as a true number one.
Mm-hmm.
So as we're seeing this young team, a lot of you've seen ups and downs from Renzel, and we've seen the ups and downs historically from Bedard, and Nazar certainly going through it. Levshinov's going through it. He might be going through it a little bit too, getting used to that workload. Backup goalies, I think, have played only 17 games for the Hawks this year.
Which has got to put them amongst the least in the
NHL.
They're
Spencer Knight's been putting in a shift.
Yes.
Okay, so, you know, and hopefully that won't be the case in the future if it's Guyon, who's actually in the Olympics right now, I believe, for Slovakia as a backup.
Yep.
And he's one of the best goalies in college hockey. Drew Commesso had a nice appearance, got a shutout in his first win when he was filling in for everybody that had the flu. So, like, they have some interesting pieces. So I don't think Soderblom's going to be the long-term backup, but hopefully Knight won't have to play, you know, on pace for, what, 60-something games this year. So I don't think that'll be the case, and I think – but if it is, like, you'd be hard-pressed to find a young goalie better than him.
Yeah, gone are the days of the early 2000s when Marty Brodeur was racking up 75 games per season. We're in a different era of NHL hockey. Mm-hmm. You mentioned some of the ups and downs. I think Tom has an interesting topic that we can tackle here. Tom is in Atlantic City, New Jersey, wants to ask about Artem Levshinov. What's going on, Tommy? You're on the hockey show. Meller in for Pat Boyle along with Barstool Chief.
Well, welcome, Jeff, and always good to talk to Chief. I'm not in Atlantic City. I'm closer to the Jersey Shore, but maybe I'll throw a few bucks down on 98 the next time I go to the blackjack. First of all, happy Wednesday. You guys have talked about, specifically Chief has talked about, the fact that it takes a while for the defenseman to adjust to the speed and the style in the NHL. And I'm not going to be real negative on Levshinov, but when you look at the fact he was the second overall pick in the draft that year, and the Hawks probably could have gotten another offensive weapon to help Bedard, here's a guy that goes minus five. I forget what game it was. He doesn't show up to meetings, or he's late. I don't think those are the kind of guys we want to build our defense corps around. And we got Korchinski sitting in Rockford. Why not give him a chance and let Levshinov maybe develop, mature, whatever it is. But I hope it's not a Kirby Doc situation where we blew another high-round pick that's not going to materialize.
Thank you, Tom. You know PB is off when he lets the Sparty slander come in here. But mm-hmm. I think it's a fair criticism. We can, you know, really dig down in. Obviously, Demidov is probably, I think, who Tom is alluding to for the Canadians who, you know, yeah, look, he's been productive. And I think most people, when the conversations were being had Levshinov versus Ivan Demidov, that was kind of the real debate, at least amongst Hawks fans. I don't know how serious anyone inside the Hawks organization may have actually been about it. But I guess, you know, whatever, early in their careers, what's your thought about the decision to go with Levchinov?
Yeah, I do think that there was a pretty intense debate over who to take. But at that time, it was the war going on, Ukraine-Russia war.
Yeah.
You couldn't really get eyes on Demidov. He wasn't obviously allowed to play in any international tournament. Scouting him became very difficult, not to mention doing interviews. There were people who didn't even know how tall he was.
Yep.
So there was just too many question marks. Levchinov, look, he's had some great ups this year. He's had some very bad games and some very bad moments, you know, like Tom referred to, missing a meeting or showing up late to a meeting. And he's kind of like a goofball kid who's going to need time to mature on and off the ice. I think the talent is there. The physicality, the body, like the skating, the offensive ability, it's all there. I think he will become a guy that the Hawks can count on to play, 24 minutes a night, an important, power play, penalty kill. I think he'll do all of that. It's just going to take some time. As far as Korchinski versus him, I think if Korchinski was ahead of him on the depth chart, he would be ahead of him on the depth chart. So I'll leave that to Davidson and the people in Rockford and Blashill. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I do think Levchinov could benefit from some time in Rockford, but they don't really have a lot of options. So if you want to call up Ethan Del Mastro or Korchinski or send a message and send Levchinov down or whatever, I do think there is this thing with the rookie wall. These guys have never played this many games. The Olympic break is coming at the right time for this team, as these guys can get away for a week, go to Cancun or wherever, and then come back, and they're going to be able to have like a little extended training camp in the middle of the year, where they can really kind of redial in some of the details of the game, and hopefully everybody is refreshed. They got their heads on right, and they're ready to finish the year strong.
And, it's such – forwards can make an immediate impact. You see it a lot more often in the NHL than defensemen. That's just the reality of the positions, right? And
yep.
So it's going to take a while, in all likelihood, for Levchinov to kind of hit his stride. We're seeing probably the worst hockey he'll ever play,
yeah,
in all likelihood, in his professional career. And, I think some Hawks fans, at least for me, I'll say, Seabrook and Keith went through a lot of growing pains when a lot of people weren't watching them.
Correct.
Right? So people may not remember this, but, like, the foundation of three cup-winning teams struggled immensely when they first arrived in Chicago. And, Keith, he went on to be a Hall of Famer. And I think Seabrook, we're all very happy,
yeah,
with the run that he had as his, deep pairing. So,
and just think about Duncan Keith, too. Like, he did a year and a half at Michigan State, a half a year back in the WHL, two full seasons.
Yeah.
At that time, it was the Norfolk Admirals, not Rockford. But two full years in the AHL, and then he came up, and then he was allowed to kind of struggle anonymously for 2 years before the Hawks really started pushing with Taves and Kane in 07-08.
Yeah.
So it takes time. Development's not linear. They might have to hold his hand a little bit. You think about a kid, Belarus, to the USHL, to Michigan State, still learning the language and still learning how to be a pro. So he's going to be fine. I'm not worried about it.
Yeah.
And Demidov, I think it's a tougher debate, but it looks like Davidson's hit on so many forward prospects, where you have Frondell coming, you have Kantsarov coming.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think long-term, I don't think they're really going to miss Demidov.
Yeah, I think if Levchinov turns into what they believe he could be, I think they'll be very happy with having, at the very least a top four defenseman, but, very likely a top, top defenseman that you're going to be relying on for.
Yeah. And look, true number ones are hard to find.
Of course.
And
you know what? It's like Makar and Schaefer spoil everybody, because you think, oh, well, he's not Schaefer. He's not Makar.
Right.
Sorry.
Not too many. Those are like the two greatest defensive prospects I can remember.
Yeah.
And, it took guys like Chris Pronger a long time, mm-hmm, to become, and it's different if you don't have like that ability to skate out of trouble the way that Makar is. Just a human breakout. Like, you can't compare really anyone else in the world to Makar. He's a completely unique talent.
Probably the best offensive defenseman since maybe Bobby Orr.
Yeah, and then he's really, when he was an impact guy, kind of.
Apologies
right
to Paul Coffey, but he got to skate with Gretzky,
yeah,
and Lemieux. So.
And Makar was a guy who came in right out of college, went right into the playoffs, and had an impact. But it took him a little bit to become more well-rounded. Yeah. Like, he really is now. He's obviously got all the offense, but when you were watching the Four Nations last year when it was best on best, McCarr was out in every situation because he's just – he's a freak of nature.
That's Barstool Chief. I'm Jeff Meller in for Pat Boyle tonight. We're hanging out with you. It is the Olympic break, so we're going to talk some Olympic hockey coming up next right here on ESPN 1000.
You're listening to The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
The Hockey Show. When you're at home, don't miss Chicago's only show dedicated to hockey fans. Tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
It's the Olympic hockey break. It might be the most exciting hockey for Hawks fans right now because I think you have a real rooting interest in who you may want to win some games here down the stretch. Yes. America. Yeah. We're gonna definitely get into that here. But before we do, I do want to ask you, Chief, because you did mention that you had a chance to watch it. I just watched it, the newest Netflix doc, Miracle, The Boys of 80. Or wait, did I say that right?
Yeah, something like that. Close enough.
I just actually watched it last night. And I think you and I probably, I'm assuming, but we'll see if we agree, we come at it from a similar perspective because neither you nor I were alive.
Correct.
Looking over at young Aiden, there's no chance he was alive.
I watched it, though. It was great.
All right. So, listen, I mentioned how I learned about the Miracle on Ice through a textbook reading when I was in fifth grade. I was 11 years old. And I remember it. Distinctly because, hey, I was in school, but we were actually reading about sports. Yeah. I was like, this is ridiculous. It was one of those moments where a light clicks on when you're in class and you're like, wow, this is pretty cool. We can actually talk about sports in school. This is interesting, and there's some historical significance. The doc they did on Netflix was fantastic. They had, I believe, all of the living members of the 80 Olympic team in
plus Herb Brooks' kids.
Exactly. So. Al Michaels, mm-hmm. A key part of it, as well as obviously he's synonymous with it these days. What were your thoughts having watched it recently? And I guess I don't know what to say because if you're unfamiliar with the story, which could be for someone who's a little bit younger, I would highly encourage you to check it out. I thought it was extremely well done.
Yeah, and look, I remember learning about that when I was about 10 because the 1996 World Cup team, they were, made a lot of references back to that.
Yes.
And so you fall in love with the story. It is kind of almost like a myth. Then the movie comes out when I was 17.
Yep.
And I feel like I've seen many documentaries about this team. So I'm like, it's an auto play for me. Like anything about hockey on Netflix, I'm going to turn on, but I wasn't expecting to learn anything. Mm-hmm. I feel like I did. There's a lot of great archival footage. It seemed like some of the guys were even I don't even remember that. And then you just had some of these great Herbie-isms, like Herb Brooks, where he's talking to the guy who ended up being the backup goalie, Janicek. He's like, oh, you get worse every day, and right now you're playing like it's next week. And it's like, that's a great insult that I will be putting into my repertoire for some of my coworkers. And it was just like the perfect primer for this upcoming Olympics because the NHL is back involved and it's never going to be the same where you have the Red Army team, which was all effectively pros, the best players in the world, playing against a bunch of college kids who were trying to maybe make it the next step. You had Mark Johnson and Neil Broughton played, but it wasn't like that team was loaded with future NHL Hall of Famers or anything. Nobody made the NHL Hall of Fame from the American side. So it was genuinely a miracle that they won that game. But it's still we are the underdogs in this tournament, and it's compared to Canada, and it's very rare that you get to root for America as an underdog. So I'm pretty fired up to watch that. It's really just hockey and soccer are the only things where we don't absolutely dominate, at least of the major sports. So I'm very excited. It got my juices flowing a little bit, and I'm ready to go for tomorrow. Is the Olympic hockey debut?
The U.S. men get things going tomorrow. What I loved about the doc, too, they for those who are unfamiliar, or even if you are, of course, it took place in Lake Placid, mm-hmm. which was the footage of looking at what the Olympics looked like in 1980 in small town Lake Placid is kind of absurd to even wrap your mind around these days.
Well, and I played in two tournaments there as a kid. So they had this thing called the Can-Am, where you have half the teams from Canada, half the teams from the United States. And so I played on that 80 ice. I played on the 1932 ice because they also had the Olympics there in 32. And I still just have like vivid memories of what the arena looked like, because you felt like you were, especially at that age, I was probably 12, 13, mm-hmm. something like that. And it's like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm skating on the Miracle on Ice.
Yes.
And it was just such like a moment in your life that I remember it so vividly.
Yeah. So again, the documentary is really well done on Netflix. And if you're unfamiliar with it, even if you are familiar with it, you're going to learn a lot that you may not be aware of. And to reconvene in Lake Placid, they brought all the living members back, where they watched a lot of key moments and talked about what was going on. And they, you know, for the most part, fell right back in rhythm, you know, ball busting like you would with all your, you know, favorite team members. And they just did an excellent job of kind of putting you back in that moment. I thought it was interesting. I don't know if I realized this. Al Michaels revealed that, you know, that was his first recollection of a USA chant breaking out.
Yeah.
In their first game,
mm-hmm.
Against Czech, right?
Sweden,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So, you know, when they were trailing, they actually were spurred on by the crowd and the USA chant. So, I mean, that's just one of those things where you don't even realize, wait a minute. I mean, it may not have been the first time ever, but when Al Michaels says it's the first time I can recall it, like, there's a little bit of gravity to the man saying that. So, nevertheless, check it out. All right, when we come back, we'll actually, though, fast forward and take a look at what's going on in today's game Today's being obviously the proverbial today, but what's going to happen in tomorrow's game with the rosters? We'll take a look as the Olympic hockey will get going tomorrow. I'm Jeff Meller in for Pat Boyle along with Barstool Chief. This is The Hockey Show on ESPN 1000.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
If we played them 10 times, they might win 9.
The Hockey Show.
Pat Boyle hosts Chicago's only show dedicated to hockey fans.
The Hockey Show on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
The Hockey Show is brought to you by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers, Chevy Drive Chicago. I'm Jeff Meller, in for Pat Boyle, hanging out with Barstool Chief, talking pucks with you. Of course, we're on the Olympic break, but that does not mean that your favorite NHL players will not be playing hockey. Oh, no, they might be playing some of the most thrilling hockey of the season as they are all competing for a gold medal here. Of course, the Canadians, the favorites, but that does not mean that the U.S. can't win this. And we saw them last All-Star break during the Four Nations compete with the Canadians.
I went to the final in Boston.
Well, that didn't work out. You're not going to the final this year, are you?
No, I will not be flying to Milan for that. And that was the best hockey environment mm-hmm. I've ever been a part of. I've been to Stanley Cup games. I've been to, you know, many, many playoff games. So that was at the TD Bank North Garden or whatever in Boston.
Yep.
There were almost no children there. It was basically, I'd say, 95% men. And it was just like all genuine hockey fans. You didn't have like the loud guys. There's nobody like paying attention to the Jumbotron. Everybody was just locked in and you're just being like, oh, that puck's got to get out. Like, you got to chip that out. You got to do that. Like, just talking hockey as the game was going on. So it was the best hockey with the best players. Obviously, it didn't go our way. They left McDavid open in the slot in overtime. That's a bad recipe if you're trying to win a game. So,
yeah, right.
So this I expect to be very similar to the actual final. Unfortunately, international rules don't allow fighting, so we won't see the same thing we saw last year in the preliminary game against Canada, where it was just opened the gates with like three, you know,
electric
fist fights. It was
absolutely electric,
sensational. I was on vacation in Puerto Rico. And girlfriend had fallen asleep. She was sick. I'm like, this is perfect. Great timing. Glad you're sick. And I just watched the game, and it was like, it was the most thrilling hockey I can remember. And obviously, the United States got the win in that. And now we're kind of running back largely the same teams. A few tweaks here or there on the outsides of the roster. But, like, I don't know how you look at our team and not be fired up and think you got a good shot.
Yeah. No, I mean, and again, yeah, they're going to be underdogs. Canada's always, in all likelihood, going to be the favorites going into every international tournament.
Yeah. And when your centers are McDavid, MacKinnon, and Crosby, tough to beat that.
Yeah.
Tough to. And then Celebrini's going to be on the top line, supposedly. So they have the best players, but not always going to be indicative. Like, we should have an edge in goal. We might have an edge in defense. Their forwards are unbelievable. But, you know, we'll have to play some big boy hockey and hopefully rough them up a little bit. And then, you know, I think this could be a coming out party for a few USA guys too.
And the truth is, for Hawks fans out there, the good news is, or I'll spin it as a good, because Connor Bedard was dissed and not picked on Team Canada, there's no reason to even have any split rooting interest here. We're all in on Team USA. Teuvo Teravainen, the sole Blackhawk, taking part for Finland, of course. So, yeah, let's go.
The Bedard thing, if he was in this tournament, and obviously, I love Bedard. He wanted to be on it. I wish he was on it. I would have been holding my breath every single time he touched a puck, like, don't get hurt. So now he can kind of chill and have a vacation and kind of say what we said off the top, where he can come back rested. Hopefully that shoulder is healed up. He can go back to taking faceoffs and being like a full go for the rest of the year. And you don't have to worry about it.
And, yeah, it might be a different discussion altogether had he been, you know, never gotten hurt this year. I don't know how, you know.
I think he got disrespected.
Yeah.
Doug Armstrong, who's the GM for Team Canada, when he came out and they were asking him, like, was the injury a factor? And he was like, no. Well, it's like, then what are you looking at? He's top five in the league in scoring. It's not even that he's not a top five player for Canada. He's a top five player in the world. So, based on the numbers. So I thought he got disrespected. I don't think people have been paying attention to how much his game, both sides of the puck, have really grown. So I hope maybe this is a little fuel for him too.
Yeah, no, I think that's, you know, if you want to, like, look at the silver lining for him getting the disc, said, hey, you know what? You've accomplished a lot. You've really shown, I think, this year to a lot of people out there why you were, you know, considered what you are, a generational talent, a top overall pick, who hopefully will lead the Hawks to the next cup. But this is just more motivation for a guy who probably doesn't need it. But there's no doubt in my mind that, you know, I'd be surprised if the next go-round, Team Canada is selected.
100%. He'll be – so the next ones are 2030, obviously.
But I'm not even talking Olympics.
Oh, so like next Four Nations? Yeah, look, I mean, Team Canada
– it's a tough
– Crosby – I was about to say Crosby, this might be, you know, his last international tournament. Then I had to stop – he might just be a guy who's just awesome forever. Like, he has shown no signs of slowing down. So I was about to rule him out because he is 39 or whatever now. But maybe that's just inappropriate. We'll let Crosby be captain again and at age 42 or whatever he'll be next time. So, but yeah, you would think.
Yeah, you wonder how far his play would have to fall off for them to, you know, because he'll probably get the nod where they'll be like, you know what, Sid, if he wants to and he's playing at a reasonable level, he'll until he wants to hang it up, he'll probably get.
He's still one of the best players in the world. He just is. I saw like a TikTok where they went around and asked everyone on Team Canada, who do you think is going to lead the team in scoring? And it was like split between Crosby and McDavid. So it's like among the best players in the world, his peers, they're still like, yeah, it's probably going to be Sid because he's just so good. He's a perfect hockey player.
And the truth is, like, when you put him on skating with the members, like, he will find people. I mean, not that he can't score, but now you just utilize what your vision, and there's going to be a lot of assists out there for Sid.
Oh, God.
With skating with who he's skating with.
He's the best player I've ever seen. So I think McDavid has more talent. You know, like, he's a better skater, faster, but, like,
from a hockey perspective? Just, when he
everything he does, he's so competitive. He wins draws. He's good defensively. Like, he is absolutely perfect. And like, you're right, the vision. He wins puck battles. He protects the puck well, even though he's not big. And his brain is just at a whole different level. So for me, like, I think Sid will probably go down to the hockey Mount Rushmore. Like, it's Gretzky, Crosby, Lemieux, Orr. Like, I think he has surpassed Gordie Howe now. He is, and just adding another gold medal on top of this, I think, which will probably happen, unfortunately, he is the guy.
Bite your tongue. Huh, interesting. Hockey Mount Rushmore. Yeah, I mean, like, the thing is, I can't, you know, I never really got to see Gordie Howe play. I obviously read a great deal about him, so that's the one where, and I, yeah.
But he played forever, and he played in the WH. Yes. It's just, like, it's a different era. It's hard to compare.
Yeah.
But it's, and, like, it's nothing against him, but it's just, like, Crosby is so, he's
sure,
just
no,
so good.
And it, yeah, you're
so
talking.
So good.
It's, like, modern hockey. Like,
yeah.
You just, you know, how the game has been revolutionized, you know, time and time again,
three cups, two gold medals, world junior gold, you know, MVPs, Art Ross, like his resume is just untouched. And there's a reason, like, Ovechkin's the greatest goal scorer ever now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he holds a candle to what Sid has done. Like,
yeah.
Sid is just in terms of just making everybody better around him, every aspect of the game, he's perfect. He's a perfect hockey player.
I'm sorry, and when all said and done, at the very least, Sid will be third, I would think, all time in NHL scoring. And he might get to Jagr, depending on how much longer he wants to go. So, you know,
yeah.
Gretzky might be the only one who.
Gretzky's untouchable.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. But nevertheless, maybe, you know what? Well, maybe Sid could actually end up with more points than Gretzky has assists. That's something that is within reach. 1,963, that's always the cute little stat. Wayne Gretzky has more assists than any other player has points in NHL history. You know what? Sid's got 1,746.
It's crazy.
It's maybe, just maybe.
I mean,
I don't know how
do
much
it.
Longer he's going to go, but
yeah.
You know, it seems like it's year to year at this point, but mm-hmm. He's still a great player, and
He's a stud. I mean, he's probably my favorite. He's my favorite hockey player in my life, because when I was a kid, it was Peter Forsberg. And obviously I love Taves Kane, Keith, Hossa. Like, those guys hold a special place. But if I had to, like, start a team with one guy ever in my entire life and I get them at their peak, I'm taking Sid every single time.
It's funny. I've never discussed this with you, but I was a huge Avalanche fan in the mid-90s. Those baby blues,
yeah.
For Peter Forsberg. And listen, I love Joe Sakic too. That was just
Forsberg was just so mean,
oh,
though,
God.
Too. Like,
yeah.
He did the reverse hits, invented, like, kind of the reverse hit, and he won an MVP. He won scoring
rates.
Awesome.
Yeah. What the 90s and early 2000s hockey. Bring me back to childhood, the nostalgia. I love it. All right, 312-332-3776. One more time out, and we'll come back and get you up to date on what happened at the Olympics. Today, we almost had what one person proclaimed could have been the greatest upset in Olympic hockey history. I don't know if I agree, but we can at least discuss what could have happened, although it didn't take place, when we come back right here on The Hockey Show on ESPN 1000.
You're listening to The Hockey Show on Chicago's home for sports.
On the ESPN Chicago app, 100.3 HD2 and ESPN 1000.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief.
On the AM
at 1000.
On the FM
at 100.3 HD2.
On your phone
through the ESPN Chicago app.
What a mistake there. What a chance to score. My goodness. It's tapped home by Luca Frigo. 1-0 Italy.
Well, that was unexpected today, as Italy was trying to make a game of it with Sweden. And they were huge underdogs. They were not able to pull it out, but just the fact that they were tied 2-2 at one point.
Shocking.
Yes.
Shocking. And it was one of those things where there's 12 teams in the tournament. The only reason Italy is in it is because they're the host nation.
Correct.
They got nobody. They got no one. They're the only team without any NHL players. And I think the shots ended up being like 44 to 11 or 50, something insane. But they were in that game in the second period. Their goalie was standing on his head. So it's, yeah, we got Slovakia upset Finland in the morning slot. I think that game started at 9:40 or 8:40 or something. So it's been more competitive, at least right out of the gates, than people thought, and certainly more competitive than the women's side.
Now, and yes, it was an upset, but at the same time, Slovakia's been – they've had a good history as
certainly,
a hockey nation.
Yes.
So not nearly as surprising as what Italy was trying to do against Sweden. Ultimately, Sweden got the best of them. Victor Hedman put in an empty netter to kind of like seal the game in the third. But at the same time, it was still a pretty good effort from the, as you mentioned, host nation. We shall see what they do the rest of the way. But the U.S. men get going tomorrow against Latvia. Hopefully, the men can mimic what the women have been doing.
It'd be tough. It'd be tough because the USA women, they are seemingly just on a warpath. Like, they're a tornado. Obviously, for whatever reason, the groups in the women's bracket, Group A or whatever group the United States is in, is stacked.
It
like,
is
Canada's in that one. The other one is, like, the junior varsity division. But it was everything in women's hockey, even more than the men, is USA and Canada. Those are by far the two best teams. And it looks like the United States has separated themselves from Canada, who are without their best player and maybe the best women's player in the world.
Yes.
But they absolutely dominated that game.
Yeah, 5-0, right?
5-0.
They crushed them.
It was never close. I turned it on. It was already 2-0. The shots were like 18-6.
Yeah.
So they had the puck all night. And, you know, shout out our girl, Kendall Coyne, you know, local girl. Actually went to my same high school, Berkshire Prep, and she's a legend everywhere she goes. She's been working with the Blackhawks. She did some broadcast stuff. She does a lot of player development. She's maybe the fastest skater, women's skater in the world. So she's certainly balling out. Same thing with Hillary Knight. So a lot of the names that we've known for the last 2, 3, 4 Olympic cycles are still doing it. Hillary Knight's 36 and still a fantastic hockey player. So it looks like we're – have the inside track to at least get one gold in hockey.
Yeah, Hillary Knight just been doing it forever now. Is this her fifth Olympics? If
I think something
memory
like
serves.
That, yeah.
Yeah, all-time women's leader in scoring for the women's hockey team. Yeah, she continues to just be the engine that drives that team, their captain, as they are 4-0. And, yeah, hopefully the men can do anything close to what the women have been doing.
They'll certainly do it in the group stage with a murderer's row of Latvia, Denmark, and Germany. So they should be able to kind of breeze through that, and then it'll be ready to go for the knockout rounds.
Yeah, they have to navigate that one because if they have any issues, it'll be troublesome for the medal rounds. But, of course, Canada has Czech, France, and Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
And then Group B has Slovakia, Sweden, who have both already won, and they're paired with Finland and
Switzerland's
Italy.
Given Canada some trouble in the Olympics historically. So they used to have a system where they were just trying to beat you 1-0. And I think they clipped Canada either 2-1 or something like that in the Olympics, maybe in 14. So we'll see that. All the other groups are definitely harder than the United States group, though.
So the men get started tomorrow, 2:10 in the afternoon against Latvia. So obviously we'll be locked in and give you plenty more on the Olympics next week on the Hockey Show. The trade deadline, Chief. It is coming up in the beginning of March, basically, when they return from the Olympic break.
Yep.
What can Hawk fans look forward to as this trade deadline rolls around?
Look forward to?
Yes, look forward to.
Not much. It's the sad state of the seemingly never-ending rebuild, although I do think the arrow is finally pointing up. They will be in sell mode. So I think Connor Murphy, I love Connor Murphy. I've said it on this show many times. I think he's on his way out. I've seen reports that they could get anywhere from a second to a fourth for him. Maybe Ilya Mikheyev, he is an expiring contract. He could be a rental for somebody. He's been a nice player. Same thing for Jason Dickinson. And it's getting to the point where can you have too many draft picks? Because they're likely, I think, going to have two in the first.
Mm-hmm.
They right now have three in the second. They've had a stockpile really since 2022 of years where they've had, you know, 4, 5, 6 picks in the first two rounds. And they're hitting on a lot of them. Oliver Moore. So Connor Bedard, Frank Nazar, Oliver Moore, Ryan Green.
Frondell,
Lardis, Kantsarov, like, we just lifted off like 8 guys right there.
For
there's
top 6 forwards.
Well, and you only have 12 forward spots
exactly.
Total. So At some point, you either got to package a few of those guys and try to get like another superstar, or I don't know what you do, or you try to like package them to move up and just get the guys that you really want in the draft. We've seen Kyle Davidson do that in the past, but you know, they have Mason West coming eventually. They have AJ Spellacy coming eventually, and these guys, they're Merrick Vanacker. They have a lot of guys who are probably, if they redrafted what they did, you know, the now versus 2 or 3 years ago, a lot of the guys that are in the Hawks pipeline that haven't made it here yet would be taken a lot higher than where the Hawks got them. So they're looking like Davidson and his staff have done a really good job. It's just a matter of like finding spots for all these guys.
Absolutely. What about someone like Jason Robertson, who I know the Stars have at least entertained the idea of trading him? Of course, would you ever trade him inside the division? I don't know, but is that somebody, obviously not at the trade deadline, that's not a deal they would make there, but what about a player, like a veteran like that?
Maybe. He's never been my favorite because he's not like he's not the best skater, and this team is built on speed. So I don't know. I think it's he's maybe not the right fit, but I'd like to see a big piece come back this summer.
Get a classic
NHL
player.
I want Brady Tkachuk. I say it every week. I want Brady Tkachuk.
Co-sign that.
Okay.
All right, thanks for entertaining me and for info.
Thanks,
Pat,
for filling in.
My pleasure. As always, the Hockey Show back next week. I believe Pat will be back.
I will be here.
So you'll get your traditional Hockey Show coming up next week. Thanks for listening, folks. I'm Jeff Meller. He's Barstool Chief. Talk to you again next week right here on your home of the Hockey Show, ESPN 1000.